ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Because yesterday's verse was so unusual, I thought I would begin by reading Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, not just verse, but series of verses, 12 through 15, Canto 3, Chapter 32, 12 through 15. Here's the translation and his commentary. Sometimes, Brahma, creator of the moving and non-moving beings, the knower of the Vedas, along with the sages, the lords of yoga, the Kumaras, and other perfected beings, and practitioners of yoga, because of seeing difference and false identity by conceptions of being a doer, enter into the Supreme Lord by execution of activities with detachment, but Brahma and the others are born again after some time by the force of the Lord in the form of time with the disturbance of the gunas. The sages also, endowed with powers by their pious acts, come back when the gunas become disturbed. Creation. Commentary. How can we understand? Question. This is quotes. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is posing a question which purportedly Kapila Deva is responding to by this verse. So, here's the question. Quote. How can we understand that Brahma gets liberation, but he does not desire to liberate his devotees? Unquote. Response. Brahma's liberation is also only in appearance. In the Gita, the Lord says, Mam eva padyante mayam etam tarantite. Those who surrender unto me cross over my maya. Bhagavad Gita 4.11. From this it is understood that even Brahma does not get liberation if he does not have bhakti. What to speak of as inferiors then, exclamation point. That is explained in these verses. Brahma, though the cause of adya of all beings, living beings, though the knower of all the Vedas, along with this, with sages like Marici, the most perfect of yogis, what to speak of practicing yogis, has false identity because of seeing that he is different from the Lord. Quote, I, Brahma, so he's paraphrasing Brahma's thought process, independent thought process, at least sometimes. I, Brahma, am the creator. Vishnu is the maintainer. Shiva is the destroyer. Thus thinking himself the best doer, he enters into the Lord endowed with auspicious qualities, Sagunam, at the time of the great destruction. And again, after some time, when the Mahatattva and other elements again appear because of disturbance of the gunas, disturbed by time, he is born again as Brahma, yata purvam, thus as previous. So the sages accompany Brahma, enjoying powers such as Anima, the mystic cities, by their karma, jnana, and yoga in the previous mahakalpa come back again in the beginning of the next mahakalpa. Paragraph. How is it possible for the greatest of yogis like the Kumaras and other perfected beings and gurus omniscient through yoga practice to have false conceptions of identity and to see difference? How could they be great masters of yoga but have false identity and see difference? Without false conceptions, they search out the undifferentiated Brahman, but having the conception that Brahman takes on variety only through Maya, that means my bodies, they see difference in the personal form of the Lord, who actually excludes difference, just as one sees difference between material objects. And they identify themselves as realizers of Brahman and reject the Lord with form. With this vision and identity, they think they are the doers, having a right to action. Therefore they return. What has been described here are Brahma sages, yogis, jnanis, and kumaras who are devoid of bhakti in some particular universe. The Brahmas and sages of all other universes have bhakti and thus attain liberation and prema bhakti with dasya and other relationships according to their degree of bhakti. So that helps, right? It's sometimes in perhaps one of the universes. Sometimes. And so the emphasis is going to what the title of the chapter is, Adverse Fruit of Activities. When there is a conception of separateness, a misconception of separateness, and because of that separateness, doership, and because of that conception of doership, entanglement in fruitive activities, there's consequences, even up to the greatest, or to speak of ourselves. So that's the message. Now, for today, there are 6 verses, all on the same theme. So it goes 16 through 21, where Kapila Dev is describing following this idea of seeing separateness. So there's conceptions, and then there's the actions of the modes of nature. Upon that conception, religious activities that are fruitive in intention, before it was Hiranyagarbha worshippers, now it's demigod worshippers. And what happens when there's this separate conception, I'm the doer, impelled by the mode of passion, fruitive activities, and consequences? That's what these verses are describing. So I'll read starting with text 16. Persons who are too addicted to this material world execute their prescribed duties very nicely and with great faith. They daily perform all such prescribed duties with attachment to the fruitive result. Short purport. In this and the following six verses, the Srimad Bhagavatam criticizes persons who are too materially attached. It is enjoined in the Vedic scriptures that those who are attached to the enjoyment of material facilities have to sacrifice and undergo certain ritualistic performances. They have to observe certain rules and regulations in their daily lives to be elevated to the heavenly planets. It is stated in this verse that such persons cannot be liberated at any time. Those who worship demigods with the consciousness that each and every demigod is a separate god cannot be elevated to the spiritual world. What to speak of persons who are simply attached to duties for the upliftment of their material condition, though the not regulated by the Vedas or codes of upliftment. Their situation is clear, but even those that are nicely following, strictly following, faithfully following the other codes of the Vedas, they can't be elevated to the spiritual world. And commonly we find they don't even have a conception. A distinction between heaven and the kingdom of God, and sometimes those terms are used interchangeably like they're the same thing, but they're not the same thing. They don't have the capacity for that distinction. Or it's one of the challenges for the Bhagavatam adherent to help people understand the distinction. And the distinction of consciousness behind attaining one and attaining the other. What to speak of living one's life accordingly. But the message of the Bhagavatam is very clear here. It sounds like this verse, Kamais Taista Ritagyana Prapadyante Anidevata. Krishna gives the faith to those persons that then in turn are faithless towards the Supreme, and the goal, the process and the goal, and the object are unclear for those persons. So text 17, such persons, impelled by the mode of passion, are full of anxieties and always aspire to sense gratification due to uncontrolled senses. They worship the forefathers and are busy day and night improving the economic conditions of their family, social, and national life. No purport. Text 18. Such persons are called Trivargika. And it explains that in the purport. Trivargika indicates dharma, artha, kama, and they just eliminate any interest in moksha. Trivargika. What does it say? Vargika means elevating processes. Such persons are called Trivargika because they are interested in the three elevating processes. They are averse to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can give relief to the conditioned soul. They are not interested in the Supreme Personality's pastimes, which are worth hearing because of his transcendental prowess. And it goes over the next verses. They're inclined to hearing novels, dramas, fiction, life stories that are worldly. And that's their attraction. And they're not interested in factual descriptions of the personality of Godhead. They're just not attracted. Purport. According to Vedic thought, there are four elevating principles, including liberation. Persons who are simply interested in material enjoyment make plans to execute prescribed duties. They're interested in the three elevating processes, religious rituals, economic elevation, and sense enjoyment. By developing their economic condition, they can enjoy material life. Materialistic persons, therefore, are interested in those elevating processes, which are called trivargika. Such materialistic persons are never attracted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, rather they are antagonistic towards Him. Paragraph. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is here described as Hari Medha, or he who can deliver one from the cycle of birth and death. Materialistic persons are never interested in hearing about the marvelous pastimes of the Lord. They think that they are fictions and stories, and that the Supreme Godhead is also a man of material nature. They are not fit for advancing in devotional service or Krishna consciousness. Such materialistic persons are interested in newspaper stories, novels, and imaginary dramas. I mean, think about it. What's popular out there? Harry Potter and anything else but Krishna. There's a new one. I saw somebody reading it next to me in the flight up here. Hunger Games. You know that one? It's a new one. It's a bestseller novel, and now it's made into a movie, and it's something like there's a big war, and it blows up everybody and everything, and then it's like devastation, and there's some little something left on the planet, and then those people, in order to control, they select some young boy, young girl from different places, and their assignment is to kill each other off, and whoever is left wins. Mm-hmm. Something like that. So there's these young people doing war games, or with primitive bow and arrow and survival and killing each other. It's very popular. Etc. In appreciating Kapila Dev's teachings here, it elevates in a different way. The appreciation of how much Prabhupada wanted Srimad Bhagavatam to be popularized. Because the narrations are certainly fascinating, but because the Personality of God is at the center, it's elevating in addition to fascinating. But knowing very well what Kapila Dev is saying, because of their conceptions, their egoistic conceptions of life, people aren't interested in the Bhagavatam. So he wants people to be interested in the Bhagavatam. Carrying on. The factual activities of the Lord, such as Krishna's acting in the battle of Kurukshetra, the activities of the Pandavas, the Lord's activities in Vrindavan and Dwaraka, are related in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which are full of activities of the Lord, but materialistic persons who engage in elevating their position in the material world are not interested in such activities of the Lord. They may be interested in the activities of a great politician or a great rich man of this world, but they are not interested in the transcendental activities of the Lord. Which is echoing something from, or expanding something from, the first canto of Narada's discussions with Vyas. The pilgrimage of the crow, Sukadeva Goswami, the second canto. Literatures that are pilgrimage for the crows, and literature that's attractive for the swan-like men. Text 19. It just continues on the same theme. Such persons are condemned by the supreme order of the Lord because they are averse to the nectar of the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are compared to stool-eating hogs. They give up hearing the transcendental activities of the Lord and indulge in hearing of the abominable activities of materialistic persons. And similar kind of purport lists the literatures, spiritual literatures, mentions also Bible and Quran. People aren't interested. These people are condemned by the supreme order as much as a hog is condemned. The hog is interested in eating stool. If the hog is offered some nice preparation made of condensed milk or ghee, he won't like it. He would prefer obnoxious, bad-smelling stool, which he finds very relishable. That materialistic persons are considered condemned because they are interested in hellish activities and not in transcendental activities, which is echoing again from the first canto, Yotnopadiyad Yadiratim Shrama Evahi Kevalam. Without developing an attraction, Vishvaksena Kata Ruchi, Sian Mahat Sevaya Vipra, Punyatirta Nishevanat. Persons who are, whatever the process is, if it doesn't result in attraction to the message of Vishvaksena Kata or Vasudeva Kata, it's a waste of time. The Bhagavatam just dismisses it. So that must be, from the Bhagavad perspective, embedded within whatever literature is presented or whatever process is to help people indirectly become involved. The advocacy is directly. So, just two more that ends this little section. Text 20. Such materialistic persons are allowed to go to the planet called Pitriloka by the southern course of the sun, but they again come back to this planet and take their birth in their own families, beginning again the same fruitive activities from birth to the end of life. Bhutva Bhutva Praliyate. He quotes Bhagavad Gita chapter 9 verse 21, where it is stated that such persons are elevated to the higher planetary systems, which is different than Pitriloka. But the principle is the same. One goes here, one goes there. As soon as their lifetimes of fruitive activity are finished, they again return to this planet, and thus they go up and come down. Those are elevated to the higher planets, again come back into the same family for which they had too much attachment. They are born, and their fruitive activities continue again until the end of life. There are different prescribed rituals from birth until the end of life, and they're very much attached to such activities. And then the final verse, when the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they fall down by higher arrangement and again come back to this planet, just as persons raised to a high position sometimes all of a sudden falls. In the purport, Prabhupada writes, the distinction between the elevated position of a devotee and that of an ordinary person attracted to fruitive activities is that when a person elevated to the spiritual kingdom, when a devotee is elevated to the spiritual kingdom, he never falls down, whereas an ordinary person falls, even if he is elevated to the highest planetary system, Brahmaloka, confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, a Brahma Bhuvanaloka. Then he quotes, Mam Upecha Tukanteya Purnarjanma Devijate, chapter 8. If you attain my abode, you never come back into material existence. So, the message of the Bhagavatam is the graduate study of the message of Bhagavad Gita. Not new, it's just explaining in an expanded way. The perils of fruitive activity, the subtlety of those perils is being presented. Why? We're not induced to embrace the mode of passion other than our aversity to the personality of Godhead. It's not our natural position, although we're strongly conditioned by it presently. So the adjustment doesn't go in all the configurations of matter. The adjustment goes in consciousness. How do we regard the personality of Godhead, and those principles that elevate that attraction is what's important in the process of bhakti. The scene is Devahuti speaking, Kapila Dev speaking to his mother, Devahuti. And she's asked a question, and he's exhaustively giving the answer, how do we get out of Maya? How do we become free from attachment to worldly existence, material existence? So, application to his two areas, personal and interpersonal, how we extend the message of Krishna consciousness to others, how do we apply the practice of Krishna consciousness to ourselves within our own lives. And in terms of our own lives, the importance of regularly hearing. Taking the medicine regularly, taking the prescription or the means of becoming normal or healthy. And you know, the converse is not being neglectful or inattentive or complacent or casual or, you know, thinking I'm okay now, because we're in the material atmosphere and it's very strong on the weak conditioned soul. So not only applying the process regularly, but keeping our attention on what the essence of that process is. Restoring the right conception of the Supreme and the goal of that relationship, and paying attention to that relationship through the process itself. And then interpersonal, so many people have so many ideas out there. And at least in principle, we should be clear what element must be there in order for something to be effective. And we can, while appreciating whatever it is that somebody, let's say, while honoring that it's everyone's right, because this is politically correct these days, you don't make judgments about what people are doing. So without absent a judgmentalism, amplify the essence and go to the essence. And if the essence is neglected, point that out. Or somehow help the other person to come to some of the understandings that Kapila Deva is presenting here, that specifically the perils of fruitive activity. When intellectuals or administrators within the world don't have proper understanding and cannot properly guide and lead the society goes to hell. The society goes down, glides down. And persons that are part of that society that have glided down, you know, what's up doesn't appear on the screen. We're having some discussion in a specific sense, but also in a broad sense, about alternative strategies, bridge strategies to get people that are out there to the point of Krishna consciousness. And it's difficult to get through to persons that, just as Kapila Deva is describing and Prabhupada is amplifying, they don't want the personality of Godhead. They don't want liberation. They want to feel good. They like feeling good, and beyond that, that, you know, they don't have a conception. They're not interested. So what do you do? You know, what door do you knock on to get them to be interested? So many things that leave that component out to reach them where they're at is very risky, because you can become contaminated by that. And then, you know, what's to say that they're going to, you know, when Krishna suddenly appears, that they're going to say yes, however discreetly, carefully, thoughtfully, based on the relationship, they, you know, Krishna comes out of the box, that they're going to move. And how long are you going to keep Krishna in the box? How long is it going to remain indirect, 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 indirect? What's the fruit of indirect, indirect? It seems like, you know, from the scope of the Bhagavatam's message, it's classic. It's not a new dance. Vyasadeva did it. Anyway, it's an interesting dialogue. Provided topics of Krishna and attraction for topics of Krishna end up factually happening, not just it's an end game that never happens, but factually it happens. We'll see. But there are persons who are very enthusiastic to do the indirect. And we need some time to experiment, because otherwise, how can we know if it's going to work or not? Anyway, there's an application point of this topic. The efficacy of Kapila Deva is, therefore, my dear mother, directly, Therefore, my dear mother, by devotional service, take direct shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated in everyone's heart. So that's the practical application and the outreach part. It seems like there has to be some education simultaneously with the indirect is the perils of indirect. You know, implicit, the perils of indirect. Okay, so any comments on the verses here, the message? Questions?
I was recently having a discussion with my husband. It might be like we see like different groups, like either most of them are, you know, or some of them are explicitly religious, like under Christianity, so they're like list of groups, and then, you know, Hinduism and then Jew. And then there are other groups which talks about, you know, which they focus on different moral aspects. So this is when we are neither labeling ourselves as, you know, a religious group nor the other one. So we're not able to attract, you know, like you're saying, like, you know,
the people that are religious, they already have their religion.
Yes.
The people that have their socialism, altruism, philanthropism, social activism,
yeah,
they've got their niche.
Yeah.
So they're not attracted to...
Yeah. And also coming to our program, we're mostly also interested in knowing the principles, you know, or, you know, the philosophy. But when it comes to, as you're saying, when Krishna comes out of the box, they are like not able to take further steps. So we're having this discussion recently.
That's the life of a preacher. And it's case by case basis. There's so many factors. You need a vision and a net to cast, but then it's still case by case. Different approaches are going to bring into the net, but still different persons, and then what? So it's if it's, anyway, it's the challenge of a preacher. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had his, Bhaktisiddhanta had his, Prabhupada has his, you know, they're unique in their approach. Prabhupada had a silk glove and a hammer with both hands. You know, depending upon the person, he could interact in a different way. But at some point, you know, that there's this risk for the preacher that at some point the sharp sword has to come out to cut. But it's, so, you know, depending upon the person and the relationship, and depending upon the devotee, you know, at what point that comes out. It's certainly, if we just, you know, continue, for example, just continue to distribute prasadam. Have kirtan, distribute prasadam. Have kirtan, distribute prasadam. Have kirtan, distribute prasadam. A lot of people would like that. But then, okay, here comes Krishna. Ooh. I've got my own ideas. It, like you're saying, these two areas.
Yeah.
Helping other people, mode of goodness. Or religion. Mm-hmm. I have my... Then it divides. Because I've got mine, you've got yours. And whatever approach you take, some people will be attracted, some people will be repelled. whatever, select this one, that one, and any out of the menu, some people will be attracted, some people will be repelled, mm-hmm. or at least not attracted. Whatever approach.
I was thinking about the point that you made about like how people are so much focused on what feels good. They are so much short-sighted in their approach to life, and therefore nobody is actually looking for this kind of far-fetched goal that we speak about. I feel one of the biggest bottlenecks that come into people's lives is like enhancing technology, which creates such a big layer of distraction.
One of the biggest what?
What
was the word you used? Distractions?
Yeah.
Distractions, okay.
Recently, like there was one keynote speech that was given in one of our company quarterly meetings by one of the MIT professors, and he works in the department of bionics, which is basically copying nature, nature's arrangement, and trying to put artificial devices. So he was telling his story that he lost his leg, in both the legs, like completely crippled, in one of his expeditions. And from that time onwards, he started like investing in this technology. And now he has come to a point with research and innovation that like he can use those bionic devices, and those would enable him to be like more effective than the normal legs. So one time one of the reporters asked him, like, if you were given a choice of like really getting back your original leg versus to continue on bionic legs, what would you prefer? He said, no question about it, I would like to have bionic legs, because when I'm reaching the age of 80, then in my normal leg, it will just lose its capacity to function. But when it comes to bionic leg, I can get upgrades every year. So that's the kind of approach, like even like those who are intelligentsia of the society are so much short-sighted, they don't see that like when they are reaching 80 years, they're just a little far away from death. So I see like this technological innovation that's going on in parallel that creates such a big layer of distraction for people to take serious steps towards self-realization.
Yeah. There's the other side. That I could say more on the same side, but there's the other side. At least say something on the side you just mentioned. I have been unable to find it in any Mahabharata, but one version of the Mahabharata I was told is where Krishna and Arjuna were in a forest, and what's his name? Asura that built the
Maya.
Yeah.
Mayadhanava.
Mayadhanava surrendered to Arjuna, and Arjuna gave his shelter, so Mayadhanava wanted to reciprocate and said, I'll give you all my secrets of technology, and Krishna said, no, that'll spoil everything. You become attracted to that, it'll spoil everything. So, but I want to do some service. Okay, you can create a place for the Pandavas in the forest. So Mayadhanava made that mystical palace, which Duryodhana, the water looks like land, land looks like water, and fell in the water, and everybody laughed, and Krishna encouraged them, laugh, so that he would be humiliated, so he would want revenge, and the battle would take place.
And being working in a company which like their main message is accelerating the pace of technology, science and technology. That's the message under which like we are working. So it's like seeing that like how where things are going. It's like
well, it's a little bit like what these people are doing. They're doing these bridge strategies, or what the Bhaktivedanta Institute did to deal with the scientists. You have to understand them in order to properly, in order to address them, or you know, refute or defeat. You have to know what Mayavad philosophy is before you can defeat Mayavad philosophy. So, in one sense, the position that you're in is very helpful, in that you can understand the inner workings of the machine. And then, you know, you can point out the perils. It leads to, you know, certain persons while you're part of that machine. The other side I was going to say is that Prabhupada certainly used the fruits of technology to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. But then one might ask, how effective? You know, that is to say, how deeply have those who have embraced Krishna consciousness, how deeply have they taken up Krishna consciousness? As opposed to a model that you don't use technology, you just do the, you know, the other model, the traditional model, and stay in the village and whoever. But the vision, certainly the vision of Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta, Prabhupada, and for that matter, Lord Chaitanya, Yukta Vairagya, Rupa Goswami, you engage things. So we don't develop those things, you know, as you're doing, both of you are doing as your career, but it's not, we're promoting the message of the company that you're with. We're, it's a practical means of livelihood, and you know, something, fuel cells promote whatever, but how is it applied? Okay, at the end people have another energy supply that's sufficient and economical and so forth, and how's that going to be applied? For sense gratification, of course. You know, you're not responsible for how it's applied, but we know how it's going to be applied. I mean, war games especially, you know, especially how to apply this technology to defeat our enemy and build our power base and enjoy. So, how to get to that? It's the time factor is moving things in the modes of nature, moving things. So time, we can't just put on the brakes on time. And as far as the modes of nature, we can, by spiritual principle and by knowledge, have some people reorient. But you know, the current is moving very swiftly. And there's money to back it. There isn't money to back the alternative. It's not profitable. Except there are persons that are very charitable, that are... Anyway, so then that can back it to some extent, and that's the Sura and Asura eternal program. The divine and demoniac natures. You have something?
Yes, Guru. I had a couple of thoughts and questions. One was, you're talking about this on the theme of bridge strategies, like indirect versus direct preaching. So I want to understand what is considered indirect. Like, for example, If we are presenting the same thing in a different language, but the essence is there, is that considered indirect also?
No.
So is there a definition of what constitutes indirect?
Yeah, Krishna is not in the picture.
So you completely remove...
Krishna is not in the picture.
So say you just talk...
You teach vegetarianism.
Oh, okay. Or even soul beyond the body, but just stop there.
Yeah, indirect. Krishna is not in the picture. It may be you're teaching, as Krishna does to Arjuna, the soul is different than the body, explicitly with the next step, that now how do we apply that detached work. But, you know, even in detached work, that's what we're hearing, detached work, great personalities that are perfect in detached work come back again. So what's the goal? So it's preparing the ground so that here's Krishna, and here's the personality of God, or the process of connecting with Him. That's the purpose of the, you're not the body in detached work, is that when Krishna appears, it's okay, I'm ready.
One of the, maybe I can call it, complaints from one particular person who has attended some of our lectures is...
Some of my lectures.
He feels that... We always talk so much about lofty goals that are, he says, so abstract to me. So when, for example, once I said maybe we should do our activities to please Krishna, for him it was like, what are you talking about? It's very abstract for me. So they're looking for something very practical.
That's very practical. It's not impractical. Abstract means he doesn't have a conception of Krishna and working for Krishna, but it's okay that we'll cover that ground. But it's not abstract. It's consciousness. It's the foundation of everything. Because if Krishna disappears, because it's abstract, then what are you working for? What's the default position? It's sense gratification. What do you mean sense gratification? That's too abstract. Sense gratification. Okay, let's be explicit. Sense gratification. Why are you spending so many hours getting your degree? What is it? It's pride of accomplishment, it's, you know, the satisfaction of using your intellect, it's the position that you receive, the honor and distinction, and it's the money, and it's the things that money can buy, and that's the fuel in the tank. That's sense gratification. Subtle and gross. Now, what does working for Krishna look like? Those things may be going on, but it's not for that purpose. It's another purpose. It's purpose-driven. Let's say, you know, somebody works hard for Krishna, somebody works hard for sense gratification. Externally, it looks the same, perhaps. But the quality of consciousness, and with the quality of consciousness, then the speech, the manner, the mode of expression, you know, the satisfaction within, that is, I'm satisfied simply working for Krishna, whatever comes. And the other one is never satisfied, no matter what comes. For example, is that practical or not? You know, because the person, I don't know the person, because the person is of high intellect, then when they speak, it may be like forceful, and he's a big intellectual, so I got to be careful here, or I don't want to set him off because I want to keep him in the fold, and I can't say it because he might run away because he's intellectual who's proud. Anyway, so dealing with people's egos and stuff like that is another issue, but. The answer is very clear. It's not impractical, it's completely practical. And the other is impractical. The other is bondage. Minus working for Krishna is bondage. That's a practical reality. You know, birth and death, endlessly. That's a practical reality. Up and down and all over the place. And unwanted misery. Is that practical? Or not? not abstract. It's, you know, punch in the nose.
Another related question I had was, so talking about bridge, building the bridge, so I see persons who are very much into this oneness thing, like either on
explicit or implicit.
Explicit, like the human level oneness, or even oneness with the animal species. You know, I can think of two examples. One recently, when Chinese person was sharing how she left China, traveled to different countries, made friendships with people because she wanted to feel that, you know,
she's part of the bigger world.
Yeah, the international thing. And now, but she said she's not satisfied. She wants to go back to China. She's feeling disconnected from the original culture. So she's kind of searching, it seems like, for that oneness, being part of something. Another example was when I mentioned something about the hog in some lecture. I don't know, maybe I made a judgmental remark that triggered someone, but one person was very upset that we look upon animal species as something lower level of consciousness.
It is a lower level of consciousness.
Right. This is a Chinese American. So she took issue with that. So I asked her, would you stay, you know, would you have a roommate as a, you know, hog? No, you are making distinctions there. You know, you are seeing difference. Anyway, we had some conversations like that.
Yeah, say, you know, what do you eat? Are you going to eat a human?
Exactly.
Because there's no distinction. Why are you making a distinction? Be a cannibal.
Mm-hmm.
We make distinctions.
So is there any suggestions on, is there value in building bridge with such people, and how do you build bridge with people?
If they have a different idea, it's not a problem. This is the principle. If somebody has a different idea, it's not a problem. It's actually nice. And then when you enter and you present, here's an alternative way of looking at what, you know, you're holding as a value or some, you know, a conception of life. Here's the holes in that one. Take a look at this one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, that makes, you know, at least I'll let me think about it. That's interesting. It's fine. But if people stubbornly hold on, that says something. You know, you give them some time, but, you know, stubbornly hold on, then it says something. You know, they'll decide to go away, or you'll not further invest.
Mm-hmm.
Because
there's no
motion, there's no movement. Like, from Kapila Dev's teachings, doubt, apprehension and misapprehension, they're signs of intelligence. It's not a bad sign. It's a sign of intelligence. But, you know, here's some additional perspective. Here's more light on the subject.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at the same subject with some more light. See, what do you see?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to be, you know, you're wrong and this is right. It's, here's some more light. What do you see?
So we don't go to a position of highlighting, say, more the oneness aspect in our philosophy of Achinti Vedalis.
You know,
I
like following Srila Prabhupada. And he addresses it directly in the Upanishad. This so-called, you know, universal brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Without the root of the universality, it's fluff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's no substance. That's reality. Now, well, you know, that's your opinion. They may say, okay, you can say it's my opinion. Now let's take a look. Is there a source of everything? And how might you know whether or not there's a source of everything? This, and this are the options of how you can know something. On the authority of the Vedas, there's a source of everything. And I accept the authority of the Vedas and accept that there's a source of everything. Without that source of everything, universal brotherhood, the idea is natural, because it's natural. In reality, it's natural. But minus the source, you're building a sandcastle at the edge of the ocean. And when the wave comes in, the sandcastle's circumstances are going to arise where you want to go back to China. Now, where did that other idea come from? You know, you could say culturally it's because I grew up in China where it was so restrictive. I wanted to go beyond that restriction. Now you went beyond that restriction, you wanted to go back to China. But what was that you were searching for? Was it just political or geopolitical? Or was it something more deep and profound? And what's the basis of that? What is the basis of the different people, the other than yourself, have this notion? I'll give you some other examples. People that are thinking of universality. Where does that come from? It's not geopolitical. Where does it come from?
So provoke some thoughts.
Yeah. So you throw some more light on the subject.
Ask questions.
And then what does it look like to you? Now here's the Vedic conclusion. That's your club. This is the Vedic conclusion.
Right.
You know, and that's politically correct these days. You can state, this is my faith.
Yeah.
I'm not putting down another's faith. Here's my faith. So you're following the rules of political correctness, and you're not putting, he says, ask questions. And the questions can be pointed. Mm-hmm. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did with Chankasi. In your religion, it speaks of, in the Quran, it speaks of killing your mother. What kind of principle of religion is that? Killing the cow, your mother.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pointed.
Mm-hmm.
And the response was, first it was, well, it's in your religion too. And then, no, it's not in. Here's what's in the Vedas. And yours is explicit, kill the cow and eat the cow. We don't eat cows. She's our mother. Ashwamedha yagya, gomedha yagya, it's that not the cow is killed. Or the horse is killed. And so many other things. But yours is, so what's going on here? The religion is based on eating your mother. Yes, there are many mistakes in our scripture. Because he was honest. Somebody can just take a defensive position and say something else. But confrontation of a misconception doesn't have to be aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be passive aggressive. It can be exploring.
Conversational.
Yeah.
So bridge preaching is not about compromise between two parties who don't agree on anything. They don't have a common place to start from because they don't accept God. We don't accept their notion of whatever God is. Or
there's no God, or any man is God, or God is man. Or
so we're not trying to, it's not about building a bridge, not in the sense of, okay, let's agree on some common ground. It's not that. It's this is what the Vedic vision is, the Vedic perspective.
You have to start with something that's shared.
So what is that shared? So it's the value.
Depends on the person.
Carry?
It depends on the person, what's shared.
Mm.
Like, let's say, something that our youth in Chicago are doing these days is they end it back to the temple. Some of the brahmacharis are going to... when I was just in Chicago, they had a program. They had a group of high school students that came for half a day. And one of the things they wanted to do was some welfare outreach that we do. So they went to an old age home or a nursing home or something like that. And so the common ground was they were interested and we're interested in giving them Krishna consciousness. So we brought prasadam and kirtan. And the people in the hospital were really happy, mm-hmm. or wherever the place is that they went. And the students saw, wow, this is, this is really nice. You're not only cheering them up, but you're giving them... And we were explicit with the students what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some common ground.
Common ground of the intentions, maybe, too.
Well, at least, they look the same. Their value system is something. our value system is not the same, but it looks the same. And it's not that Krishna suddenly comes out of the box. Krishna was out of the box. They came to the temple first and then went to this place. And then they came back to the temple. And they went on Harinam with us. And they were dancing with us. And so it was, you know, but there was some common ground. That was a religious studies group, but, you know, explicitly the teacher conveyed that the students have an interest in what you do to help people. And they wanted to take part in some activity that you do to help people, so it was, that's how it was arranged. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we go do those things even if it's minus a student group, because that's part of our value system. We want to give Krishna consciousness to all types of people, especially in our neighborhood. So there's a, you know, it's one of the places. For example. Or we may go to Earth Day event and distribute prasadam on Earth Day and have kirtan on Earth Day and give our literature and talk with people about the value of protecting Mother Earth. But Krishna's, you know, front and center. For example. Okay, last question. It's really going on here.
Guru Maharaj, like, I was thinking that when we engage some people for some service at home, say the cleaners, so is it a, is it, like, I feel comfort in thinking that, okay, they are cleaning the temple of Krishna and then, like, then it's, they are getting some benefit. And in the same, like, in colleges, if, like, cooking class is being given, so the students are directly, like, making the preparation there and it's being offered to Krishna.
Yeah.
So is it like a direct or indirect, and how...
Depends on the consciousness of the person that's doing it, whether it's direct or it depends on their consciousness. In your consciousness, you're engaging them in making an offering for Krishna, or you're engaging them in cleaning the temple of Krishna. Your consciousness can be Krishna consciousness, and their consciousness can be, you know, I'm learning how to make something that I like. But because of the Krishna consciousness that you're carrying, they're getting spiritual benefit because you're making this offering to Krishna. And that's helping their Krishna, helping them advance in Krishna consciousness. Unknowingly engaging in devotional service because of the presence of a devotee can result in knowingly engaging in devotional service. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.